Hey, Bucks fans, happy Tuesday on the Monday Morning Joe podcast. Of course, that makes no sense, but you know what? Yesterday was Christmas. I figured most of you would not be listening. Busy with family, busy with vacation, busy traveling. So here we are on Tuesday. Very happy to be here. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. The season marches on. The podcast is presented by Lakeland Automall, Ford, and Hyundai, and Discount Garage Doors. So what? You didn't get your garage door fixed before Christmas. All right, you needed a new one. You didn't get it done. Get it done now. Same day, free service call from Discount Garage Doors. Just give them a shout, 1-866-420-DOOR. They work 7 days a week. They cover 18 counties throughout Florida. This is an excellent local company, Discount Garage Doors. And of course, the prices are great. State licensed, insured. And again, same day free service call. So when they come out, they'll give you a diagnosis. They'll tell you everything you need for a repair. They will tell you everything you need for a new door and all your options. And they don't charge you a thing. Tremendous service. Great local company. DGDoors.com is the website. DGDoors.com. Use your Joe Bucks Fan discount for 10% off. And it's a great, easy website. Just check them out. They have other coupons there and different options. But really, it's a free service call. They'll come out to tell you what you need. It's just that simple. Lakeland Automall, Ford, and Hyundai. Lakeland Automall, Ford, and Hyundai. Sometimes I call them Lakeland Ford. You know who they are. This is the end of the year, the very best time to buy a car. 2017 models are going fast, and the 2018 models are already in. That means the biggest end of the year savings are right now, up to $12,000 off MSRP, huge financing discounts, 0% APR for 72 months, and no payments until spring. I mean, you can't beat that. Plus, they have the nationwide lifetime warranty, which is unbeatable, and 1 year free factory maintenance and 5 years roadside assistance on every new vehicle purchase. You get all of it. Plus, before your current vehicle gets another year older, get $3,000 over Kelley Blue Book value for your trade. This is the time to upgrade and get into your dream ride. Also, Bucks fans, remember, don't forget, exclusively to Lakeland Ford, go see manager Sean Sullivan. He's going to give you an extra $500 off for mentioning the podcast on any new car, any new vehicle. The deals end January 3rd. You can get $500 off. You can get a $500 Amazon gift card. Talk to Sean. Great place to go. Check it out now online, lakelandford.com. All right. So here we are, Bucks fans. 4-11. How does that feel for your post-Christmas hangover? Not very good. Not very good at all. And where do you stand on the team, really? That's what is the big question for all fans. It's a tough spot. There's a lot of people leaning on a lot of different fences and straddling all kinds of areas, and it's a tough spot. Fire the coach, fire the defensive coordinator, stick with the coach, fire the GM, keep the GM. John Gruden is swirling out there, and okay, if you think you need a new coach, is Gruden really the best head coach? Do we need a coaching search to keep this thing fair and what it should be? Is Gruden a fit with Jameis Winston? Is Jameis Winston a fit for the Buccaneers? I mean, there's just a lot of questions out there, and they all are there because the team is no good. The team just does not know how to win, and don't tell me about one-score games and close losses and all that stuff. I have heard that so many times, so many different ways, in so many seasons, in so many sports. Sometimes it comes true. Sometimes you can say, yeah, they played a bunch of tight games and the next year they got over the hump. But just as many times, it's meaningless, or it goes the opposite way. So I don't want to hear it. It doesn't mean a thing to me. It's better than getting blown out. It speaks a lot more to the team and to the character and the potential than getting your doors blown off 43-12 every week. But is it impressive? Is it special? Is it provide hope? Not really. It really doesn't. I don't care how you spin it. It just doesn't. I remember hearing some of that nonsense with year two of the Buccaneers regime with the Jason Light and Lovie. That, oh, you know, they played a lot of close games under Josh McCown and stuff like that. It's, come on. Come on. It just doesn't work that way. And it was also part of what they looked at when Lovie was hired. The regime was like, well, you know, we think we owe it to the fans, and we think we're pretty close. And, you know, it's just nuts. Bucks are not close. One, because they don't have a pass rush. Two, because there's something wrong with this offensive system and this quarterback and the way they mesh together. And a lot of it comes back to points. And obviously, duh, you know, you score points in the NFL. That's how you win games. Every team needs to score points. But something I wrote today on JoeBucksFan.com really says it all in a lot of ways. Or actually, I don't even know if it published yet. You know, the Buccaneers under Mike Glennon in 2013, looked it up, went through all the numbers. In Mike Glennon's 13 starts, he has more points put on the board by the Bucs than Jameis Winston does in his 13 starts this year. And, okay, take away one of those starts, right? If you want to be fair, take away one of those starts because he played half a game against Arizona and half a game against the Saints. So give Jameis 12 starts. Okay, so you give Jameis 12 starts this year. He still has less points than they got from Glennon. And how does that actually happen? I mean, think about that. Think about that. The offense gets on the field, and it has one goal, score points. Glennon's brutal offense averaged 19.5 points a game. Jameis, in 12 games, I'm giving him 12 games as a starter, 18.4. How does that happen? Glennon's throwing a Tyquan Underwood, Tim Wright. He's got no running game. He himself has no experience and isn't very talented. How does this happen with all of these weapons? It's such a telling story of this season. The Bucs averaging about 8.5 points per game in the first half. They actually jumped up that mark a little bit on Sunday because they had, I think it was 10 in the first half. I don't know. I got to double check. Doesn't matter. Not the point. The specifics of Sunday's game aren't the point here. The point is this offense can't score. In 2015, Dirk Cutter, first year calling plays, the Bucs were 20th in the NFL in scoring. Last year, they're 18th. This year, they're 20th. They're not scoring points. Jameis Winston is not scoring points. And that's his one goal when he gets on the field. Score points. Dirk Cutter, that is your biggest downfall right there. It really is. You got the weapons. You got the quarterback. Third year in the system. You're not scoring points. And not everything is Dirk Cutter's fault. Chris Godwin has got to catch that touchdown ball. That's the way the play is drawn up. That's where he's expecting it to be. It was right on the money, really, from Jameis. But there have been plenty of those this year. Is that coaching? What it is? I don't know. But you know what? You look at it on the broad scale, this offense doesn't score. And that's what's killing it. It doesn't have the defense that the Bucs had in years past to help it out. But it did on Sunday. The defense was excellent. What, they allow 13 points? 14 points, the defense itself? It's a bad situation. And, you know, I said right here on the podcast that if Dirk Cutter lost out, if he lost all the way through the rest of this season, I can't endorse bringing the guy back on a 6-game losing streak on the heels of an earlier 5-game losing streak. You just can't do that in the NFL. When that happens, there are serious, serious problems. And in the Bucs' case, those problems are not injury. Yes, they've had injuries, but I'm sorry. Their core problems here this season are not injuries. And yes, Jameis wasn't 100% earlier, but not every quarterback's 100%. You have to figure out a way. Cutter hasn't found a way, and the essence of any good team is winning, learning how to win. Cutter himself talked about this early in his first season last year, talked about how culture change needed to happen, that there wasn't a winning culture with the Bucs, and that he's been on teams that just don't have it, that unspeakable ability to win, and they're working on it. Well, Cutter worked on it, they found it, and then they lost it for a whole season. It disappeared. Bucs went 2-1, and here we are at 4-11. Nothing has worked. Playing close games, it's nice, but the idea is to win. And really, there you are with the head coaching situation. Do you have any confidence that Cutter can turn this around next year? Do you have confidence? I don't have the confidence. Certainly don't have the confidence in the defense. I haven't seen progression in the offense. I haven't seen progression in the quarterback, who has played a couple of good games in a row, although he's turning the ball over and he's not putting up points. So it's a very ugly spot for Team Glazer. But do I think Cutter's a total loss? No. Would it shock me if he came back next year and turned things around with a different defensive coordinator and found a way to write the offense and make it hum a little bit better and they went 10-6? No, it wouldn't shock me at all. Whereas it would have shocked me with Greg Schiano. It would have shocked me with Lovie Smith. So I don't think Cutter is in that category. But right now, this team is a loser. It's a loser with not a lot to hang your hat on and playing hard. Sorry, that's the expectation. So I had to just rant that out. It's just the frustration that we live as Bucks fans. I know you feel it. You know, we appreciate feedback on Twitter at Joe Bucks Fan or even under the stories and the comments. Love to hear how the fans feel. It's always neat to get that perspective, and we get plenty of it. And part of this podcast is my therapy to let you know how I feel. Now, I was at the game Sunday in Charlotte. I flew out on Sunday morning, actually, from Orlando real early, and I flew back on the Buccaneers team plane. How about that? Their massive charter on Delta Airlines. Big appreciation to the Bucks for letting me do that so I could get back early for the holiday season. It's nice to get back early on Christmas Eve and still get to go to the game and be in the luxurious lifestyle that that you get in when you're on a team plane. My goodness, these guys have it good. Now, unfortunately, here's the bad part. Unfortunately, as part of the terms of taking that team charter flight back to Tampa, I can't talk about what I witnessed. I can't use that experience on the Bucks plane as a reporting vehicle for JoeBucksFan.com. So I apologize for that. There's not much I can do. I mean, we got to be honest here as journalists, and it was just part of the deal. So, of course, you all understand why I took that deal. But, yeah, man, when you're sitting in earshot on the plane of Rondé Barber and Dave Moore talking about the action and all the stuff you witness and just the whole process is kind of neat, but I'm stuck. Sorry, guys. I cannot talk about it. But what I can talk about is the locker room. Now, the Bucks locker room, y'all saw Jameis melt down on the field after the game because of the fumble that they didn't give to him, the recovery, his third fumble of the day, his third lost fumble of the day. They gave it to Julius Peppers, and Jameis appeared to have it under the pile. Okay, Jameis freaked out. I don't have a problem with him losing it at the end of a lost game, but does he run onto the field if Shelton Quarles doesn't get in his way? Does that happen? And yes, Shelton Quarles was near me on the plane, and I can't talk about that. But Jameis can't be losing his head like that because, you know what? If he darts onto the field and screams at a ref, and maybe the league suspends him for a game if he bumps the ref or who knows what, it's not what Jameis needs to be doing. It's not the leadership that this team needs, but I have no problem with the fire and the intensity and the reason behind it. So that's that. But then the team goes into the locker room. And fans still listening, the super diehard, still dialed into the Buccaneers radio network after the game, heard TJ Reeves in the locker room. And next thing you know, there's a bunch of screaming, and he's got to cancel his interview with Lavonte David, and they go to a break. Well, Reeves gets in early, and then the other media gets to go in behind Reeves. When they sort of everybody lines up outside the locker room and the security outside the locker room says locker room's open and they open it up. That's how it goes down in the tunnel. And there was an exceptionally long delay after this game. Usually it's especially quick on the road to get into the Bucks locker room, but there was a delay. So, you know, I was talking to Joel Glazer for a while, which is another conversation that I can't reveal. It's just part of being an honest, fair journalist. You know, if something's off the record, if it's not for publication, it's not for publication. But we were waiting for the locker room to open. And finally it opens. And I was tipped off by Lee DeKemper, my partner here on Joe Bucks Fan, about what was heard on the Buccaneers radio network. So I was asking guys about that fight. There was clearly some sort of altercation in the locker room. And I was able to confirm, yeah, there was an altercation in the locker room. Would anybody give me names? No. Did I understand that guys weren't going to give me names? No, but I have my thoughts of who might have been involved. TJ Ward, very snapping at me, saying he wasn't talking about that twice when I asked him on it. I'm not talking about that. But he was willing to talk about other stuff. He wasn't mad about at me. I have a feeling he might have been in the mix there. Jameis was clearly upset in that locker room, very upset. He was in the corner. He had a corner seat. It's a small locker room in Carolina. It's an older stadium. And Jameis is in the corner next to a wall, a line of lockers. He's the last one. He's in the corner. He's next to a wall. And he's sitting on his little stool, and he's just distraught. I don't know how else to say it. Absolutely distraught, sitting there in boxer shorts and just distraught. Dirk Cutter comes into the locker room. Now, he's been the most visible coach in a locker room I've seen, especially this year. Cutter often comes in to congratulate guys. I've seen him have some one-on-one extended chats with Jameis as well after games. Not every game, but after games. Well, at this time, Jameis is standing up at his little stool. And remember, he's in a corner. He's wedged between a locker and a cement wall with no lockers on it. He's literally in the corner. And over comes Dirk Cutter. And he is talking to Jameis, and they're talking to each other very calmly, very calmly. But you know what? They are literally close enough to kiss. That's how close they were. In each other's faces talking. Now, Cutter is probably 6'1 and a half, Jameis 6'3 and a half. So they're pretty much the same size. In each other's faces talking for a good while. Cutter looking like the part of dad, you know, using his pointer finger and talking, and Jameis is listening. And I got to say, if there was any tension between those two guys, if they really had some sort of relationship issue, to be that close in another man's face with a locker behind him and a cement wall on the corner, it was the ultimate cornering in the visual. But Jameis was totally cool with it, and they were talking, and Jameis seemed better after the coach talked to him. It was, to me, a very telling moment. Not something you're going to read about anywhere else, but it's part of keeping my eyes open in the locker room, and very interesting. And you know what? Adam Humphries was maybe four guys down, and the inclination of four small lockers down from Jameis. Nobody was in between them at the time. And, you know, you would think Humphries would be looking over, peeking over to see what was going on, or if it seemed strange to Humphries, he might've been looking, but you know what? He wasn't looking at all. He was not looking at all. And I came over to talk to Humphries, and, you know, it was partially so I could try to hear what Jameis and coach were saying or just get an idea of the conversation. But there's a very healthy relationship there between Jameis and Cutter. I believe it. I believe I've seen enough of it. A lot of respect. And again, if you don't have respect for a coach, you're Jameis Winston, you're going to have a problem with him right in your face like that, that tight of quarters. I think Cutter only did it because he didn't want anyone to hear. But regardless, it's just, you know how it is with people you know and the space that's naturally there and that's naturally okay. It was interesting to see. So a little bit of locker room juice right there. As far as the fight itself, a lot of guys were talking to me about how it shows the passion of the team, how they care, how it shows that guys care. And the guys do care in there. I've seen a bit of a happy to be here. I wrote about this last week after the Atlanta game. Has been a little too much moral victory type of mentality on the Bucks, I think. And I get that at some point you have to just deal with losses, but this loss was particularly painful for the guys. I think everybody knew they were the better team on the field, and that was the difference. That was really the difference, because the defense showed up. The pass rush was even something that you could talk about. It wasn't a zero negative factor. So that's what made this so much more painful. The Bucks looked like the better team on the field. They just made too many mistakes. And for the Cutter fans out there, and I know there aren't that many, I got to say to you, look, the special teams killed this team. And it goes to discipline. It goes to preparation. It goes to being the head coach of a football team. And you got your special teams captain, Josh Robinson, a guy that was re-signed in free agency this past offseason, who was paid very good money to be that special teams captain. He blew it on the fake punt. One job, cover a guy who, from a punter who's going to throw a weak sauce pass in his direction, and Robinson couldn't do it. You know, pass interference early. It's just bad. Bad stuff. And the kickoff return for a touchdown. Sloppy special teams. Look, special teams have gotten worse this year outside of kicking. They've gotten worse. The coverage units, the special teams, we haven't really done much of anything too exciting on the offensive side of special teams. The Bucs certainly never go for a fake or anything like that. Sure, Will Golston had his second block, but in all that, my point is special teams has made bigger mistakes this year. The defense has fallen back. The offense has taken steps back. It's just not a good situation for the head coach. Now, as far as John Gruden goes, the rumors keep coming. Gruden doesn't deny him, and the Glazers aren't giving any endorsements. I don't think it's really affected the team significantly from talking to a lot of guys. They're just not dialed in or just so used to BS in the media in their minds that they don't really care. This is not a team that – I've seen other teams that care more about what's going on in the media. This isn't one of those Bucks teams. So I believe a lot of these guys when they say either they've tuned it out or they're not even hearing it, just talking to so many guys off the record on that front to see how Cutter's handling it. So the Gruden thing, though, I have heard from multiple sources that the Bucks are looking at a John Gruden who wants control of the team and top salary. Now, I don't care about the salary. The Glazers can spend their money however they want. You want to pay Gruden $9 million a year and make him the number one paid head coach? Go ahead. Pete Carroll, Andy Reid, Bill Belichick, Sean Payton. Those are the top paid coaches in the league at like $8.5 million. You want to pay Gruden $9 million, you want to pay him $8.75 million, you want to pay him $10 million. I don't care. I don't care whatsoever. Maybe other owners would care that you're changing the salary scale for coaches, but who cares? It's not my money. It doesn't affect the salary cap. I don't care. Pay John whatever you want. But control of the roster, that's a whole nother ball game. Is Gruden qualified? Sure, he's a football man. He knows guys, but did he do a great job with the personnel when he was here? No. Was he hamstrung a little bit by the Glazers being a little cheap with the budget in his last years? Absolutely. Was he good at the draft? No. Has Gruden learned in recent years because of spending years with ESPN on draft coverage and scouting guys and doing more film study in different ways and expanding his mind on young personnel? Has he gotten better? Probably. You would think he's learned a bit, but to give him full control, I don't think it's a good idea. I really don't think it's a good idea. But the cynical guy is going to say, can the Bucks get any worse? Can Gruden be worse in free agency than Jason Light? Probably not. And that's going to take me to, well, first, let me just say this. I don't know what's going to happen with Gruden. Nobody knows. Nobody knows. If I were the Glazers, I'd be a little worried about how serious Gruden is in his comeback. I mean, if we take on what he says on face value, he loves his job in broadcasting. He wouldn't be the first guy to come here for 2 years, come back to coaching and be like, hey, you know what? I miss broadcasting. I miss my semi-retired life. I've done enough. This team, this ownership. You know, I don't know. I'd be question Gruden's commitment long term. And on that front, I would question giving him full control because I don't know what the guy's motives are long term. And I think that's fair. So the Glazers have a big decision to make if they want to hire Gruden. It's not just bringing him in as coach. It's what kind of control do you give the guy? Can you find a GM for him to work with and respect? Ira Kaufman says bring in Derek Brooks as a chief of football operations. And I think Brooks would be a great guy to work with Gruden because he wouldn't be a yes man. And Gruden has the ultimate respect for Brooks. And I think Brooks could help on the player personnel front, even if they kept Jason, if you kept Jason Light for the draft, if you kept Brooks for player evaluation, overall consulting, and a free agency as a guy who can be more of a point on pro player personnel and Gruden, that might be a great fit. Because look, Light is feast or famine. Terrible in free agency. Terrible, terrible. He picked the wrong guys for chemistry this year. TJ Ward, bad fit for chemistry this year. Swaggy Baker, bad fit for chemistry. DeSean Jackson, I like the guy, and I think he's put forth great effort this year. But is he a good fit for this team's chemistry? Was he the right fit? No. Those are your three key guys. And we know of Light's other failures in free agency. So Light, if you're going to keep Light, you got to get him help in free agency. We've said it, so it's like the same thing. If you're going to keep Cutter, then you got to get him a new defensive coordinator. If you're going to do X, you got to do Y. I think in Light's case, if you're going to keep him, you can't just let him start buying free agents again. But then there's John Gruden. If he's the coach, well, is he going to pick the free agents and control? And it's all a mess. Messy stuff. Where this thing goes, I don't know. We all know at this point, right now, with one game left, it's in the Bucs' best interest to tank on Sunday against the Saints. I hate saying that, but that's in their best interest. Tank the damn game, get the better pick, and, you know, that's that. But they're not going to do that. They're going to play. Maybe they make a tanking decision at halftime or late in the game. I don't know. But it would be nice to get a decision on this season from the Glazers. If you're going to fire Dirk Cutter, do it now. Tank Sunday, do it now, get this thing going in the way you want to go. But that's just me. I think that's the smart move. If otherwise, say you're coming back with Dirk Cutter, tank the game anyway and move on. Maybe cut some guys as a accountability statement. Do it right now. Swaggy, Doug Martin, those guys. It's a tough spot for the management of this organization, how to handle this next week. And I'm going to be back with you on Black Monday with a podcast. I'm probably going to be calling for Dirk Cutter to be fired because I said, and I meant it, if you lose six in a row, you lose out. You can't come back. There's just not enough there. Although I like Dirk, and I think that might be the wrong decision, whereas I didn't think Schiano or Lovey was the wrong decision, but this could be. I don't know. But it's a tough spot. I think all Bucs fans feel the angst. They're excited by a new coach. They're excited. They're scared. Everybody's his feelings across the board, which is kind of how I started the podcast. And none of them are wrong because this is a very difficult Bucs team to read. There's a quarterback situation with the potential suspension, with how Jameis is going to mature from here. Is Cutter the guy to do it? I don't really think so. So, on the field, and I'm going to keep the podcast short, on the field, it was good to see McCoy back. He's battling through a tough injury. You saw a little more about what he could do in a big game for the other team. Forget about our team. A big game for the other team where you know that they are going all out. They are keyed in on McCoy. He was still successful. The defense, the linebackers showed a lot more of what they can do. It's an excellent linebacking unit. It just wasn't enough. Just was not enough. There's Cam Newton throwing to Kalen Clay. Kalen Clay, the former Bucs draft pick. That just sort of says it all in the world of the Bucs. There's just not the right finish, not the right mentality on this team. You know, sometimes you look at the talent and you think they're overachieving on defense. Sometimes you think they are underachieving on defense. There's no rhythm to the offense. It's just a mess. Just a mess. Tough times. Tough times. Hang in there, Bucs fans. On JoeBucsFan.com, of course, we're still rolling on. We never stop. We never take a break. There are no holidays. Follow this podcast, Podbean, Google Play. Let's see. Where else? iTunes, of course. Visit DGDoors.com. Don't forget Lakeland Auto Mall. .com for all those incredible offers as the year ends. And I'm just in a bad spot because the Bucs now, as we've written on Joe Bucs Fan, Cleveland South, longest playoff drought in the NFC. Nothing's been working. There are no answers from Team Glazer on getting this thing right. We thought we were on the right path. Now we're on the wrong path. Again, Jameis Winston is not thriving in 3 years through a dirt cutter offense. The goal is to put up points. He's not putting up points. Something is not working. And maybe it's just, excuse me, the chemistry between the quarterback and the play caller. There's got to be that chemistry, too. There's got to be that feel. Something just isn't right in the red zone. And Jameis with the turnovers, they'll kill you every time. Every coach says it. Every player knows it. He can't find a way to stop it. And you know what? Even late in that game, you still have a timeout. You still just need a field goal. One play to get you in field goal range. It is a big deal when you fumble with 40 seconds left. It is. So, I don't know. Dark times, but there's still a lot of talent around. There's going to be the excitement of what happens next week. And as Ira Kaufman has said many times, even if Dirk Cutter is still here in a week, doesn't mean change, massive change, is far away. All right, guys, hang in there. Thanks for tuning in. We appreciate it. We never stop here, Monday Morning Joe podcast, even though it's Tuesday. Have a good one.